All around the country, there are incredible stories of cases of possible reincarnations. Little boys who think that they were pilots during World War II, and they know more things about what had happened than most people. Very strange stories. They happen all the time. In a moment, Amy Weiss joins us. She happens to be the daughter of one of our dear friends, internationally renowned author Dr. Brian Weiss. Remember his book, Many Lives, Many Masters, about the true account of his patients' regression and memories of past lives. Amy has a novel out called Crescendo, and we're going to be talking to her about past lives and past life regression next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Let me tell you about Amy Weiss, a licensed clinical social worker. She's also a clinical musician intern with Harp for Healing. We'll talk about that. Certifies harpsists and other musicians to provide therapeutic bedside sessions for hospital and hospice patients, and is one of only six musician-trained programs accredited by the National Standards and Board for Therapeutic Musicians. This is an incredible story. Graduated from Columbia University with a degree in psychology, received a Master of Fine Arts degree in fiction writing from Washington University in St. Louis, and a Master of Social Work degree from Berry University. Welcome to Coast, Amy Weiss. And Amy, I believe this is your first time on the program?
This is my first time, and it's such an honor to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
That's so great. When were you at Washington University? Because I still stay in St. Louis. Very familiar with that area.
Oh, you do. I was there, I think it was 2003 to 2005.
I know it really well. Really well indeed. Great times.
It's a great city.
What were some of your favorite restaurants out there?
Oh, I don't remember. I used to go to the Loop a lot, the Delmar Loop.
Oh, the Delmar area, sure.
Yeah, and I lived in Central West End for a year, so there were fantastic restaurants.
Did you ever go to Herbie's in the West End when it was open?
Which one?
Herbie's.
I don't remember that one.
Okay, that's...
I definitely went to Blueberry Hill a lot.
Oh, yeah, that's a great place. Joe Edwards' place.
Yes.
That's a great place. Anyway, by the way, I got to tell you, we think the world of your father on this program.
Thank you so much.
He has paved the way for some incredible things, and I guess it rubbed off because you're the same way.
Yes, he loves being on your show too, so the feeling is mutual.
You've written a book called Miracles Happen, but this one, Crescendo, it's a novel based on some very interesting things, isn't it?
Yes, it's a spiritual parable, so it's fictional. I made it all up in a sense, but the things I'm talking about, my favorite spiritual things, like soul contracts and past lives and parallel universes and near-death experiences and soulmates and lucid dreaming, all those things are very real. It's just told in a fictional format.
Well, you know, it's a great way to get a message out when you write it as a novel or novella and get that same message out that you might not be able to do if you write a nonfiction.
Exactly, George. And some of my favorite books, like Jonathan Livingston Seagull and Illusions and The Alchemist, were books that were explaining really interesting spiritual subjects, but in a fictional format, just like you're describing. And it does reach a lot of people who might not get the message in a different way.
Were you a believer in past life regressions growing up with your dad?
I've always been a believer in it. When he was writing, not when he was writing Many Lives, Many Masters, but when he first started seeing the patient, Catherine, that is in that book, I was about 1 year old. So in a sense, I grew up with this learning and this knowledge at the same time that my dad was discovering it, although I don't think we were really discovering it, more like rediscovering some soul knowledge. So I've never really had to overcome either a fear of death or a disbelief in these kinds of subjects in the same way that most people have and that my father had too. So I always grew up, this resonated with me, and it seemed true then, and it did throughout my whole life.
There has to be a purpose for reincarnation. What do you think that purpose is?
I think it's to learn and to grow. And I think the earth is like a school, and we come here time and time again. We reincarnate over and over again to learn different lessons, but really ultimately the lesson is one of love. And so it's too much to learn all these lessons in one lifetime. That would be a lot of pressure. And so we just come back infinite times in order to evolve our souls and grow and to learn all the lessons that we need to learn.
If you learn the lessons faster than someone else, does that mean you won't come back as often?
I guess it means that, but I think once you get to a point where you've really learned the lessons and you have so much compassion for the other souls who are still learning them here, you want to come back in order to help them and to help raise their vibration and help them learn their lessons.
Those people who keep coming back, does that mean they keep screwing it up in their lives?
No, I don't think so. I think we all keep coming back in the same way that you didn't just graduate when you finished the first grade. You kept going through every grade until you reached college or postgraduate education. It's the same way with our souls. So nobody's screwing it up, really. We're just learning, maybe at a slow rate.
Now, I know time doesn't mean much on the other side, but in terms of our time, if somebody dies, how soon do they come back again, in your opinion?
I think it takes a while, but what you're saying is absolutely correct, George. There really is no time on the other side. I think of it kind of like gravity. Here on the physical Earth, gravity is very real. But you go into space and it doesn't exist anymore. It exists to a much lesser degree. That's how time is, I think. But I think on the other side, in as much as time does exist, we can take our time. We can rest and relax and reevaluate the life that we just had and help other people from the other side, help our loved ones, and then take some time to plan our next lives. So it can be a while.
You experienced a profound healing episode as well. What happened?
I had a physical healing and an emotional healing. So I can talk to you first about the physical healing because that's a little bit more dramatic. When I was about 25 years old in this life, I was diagnosed with cataracts, which is a little bit unusual.
That is, you're way too young for that. Jeez.
Yes, I am. It's true. And I wasn't having symptoms. It was just found on an eye exam when I was going to get a new prescription for my eyeglasses. So I was going to eye doctors, and nobody understood why I would have cataracts. And my father was doing a past life regression session at the hospital where I worked. He was doing an in-service. And I'd never had a past life before, you know, despite being his daughter, I was in my 20s. It had never happened for years and years. But for some reason that day, it worked. And I went back to a past life where I was kind of a hermit in the Middle Ages. And I just liked to be by myself and collect rocks and leaves and things. And the townspeople there thought I was a wizard. I wasn't. But they didn't understand what I was doing. And they came into my little hut, and they burned it down with their torches. And the fire from the torches clouded my eyes, and it made my eyes blind. And a cataract is a clouding of the lens of the eye. And the message I got was, sadness clouds the eyes. And what that meant to me was, I had been carrying from that life this feeling of victimization and not understanding why people would be so cruel and hurt other people. I'd carried that into this life. And it was affecting my vision in this life, not only with the cataracts, but metaphorically. I was seeing things through not a clear lens, like, still feeling unsafe in this world and not understanding the actions of others. And when I needed to let go of that victimization and that depression, that feeling, in order to clear my eyes. And since then, some doctors can't find cataracts at all, and others say they can find them, but they will never affect my vision. So I'll take that.
So you did not have to get the plastic lenses or anything like that?
I haven't done anything, no surgery, nothing.
That's remarkable. Good for you. No, you are way too young to have cataracts.
But in a sense, I've had them for a couple hundred years.
The fact that this carried over from past lives for you, does that happen to a lot of people, that the things that happened in other lives somehow in different ways manifest themselves in our life today?
George, I think it does. It can be carried over like a physical symptom like I had. Some people have birthmarks at the site of a past life trauma. Some people carry over more emotional symptoms like phobias or even a love of a place. It doesn't have to be a negative thing. Or they carry interpersonal relationships with other people. And I'm not really sure the mechanism of why this works, because it doesn't seem to be every past life that we carry in our body, but more like certain past lives that have a resonance or a lesson for us in the current life, or things that might have unresolved issues.
I've always wondered if you come back in other lives, assuming you stay the same in terms of, let's say, sexes, do you all look the same? I mean, if you come back as a woman 10 times, are you similar looking or totally different?
I think, in my opinion, that we're pretty different because we change our races, we change nationalities, religions, all kinds of identifying characteristics are changed because that's how we best learn. We wouldn't learn as much if we stayed the same kind of white, female, straight throughout our whole lives. We have to learn everything. So I think maybe there'll be some familiar traits. I think you can tell with the eyes sometimes, but in my opinion, we look different.
Well, with Amy Weiss, her new work is called Crescendo. It is a novel, but it leads you into reincarnation and past lives as well. I'm not going to tell anybody the ending. It's not fair, but it should be turned into a little miniseries or something. You know that?
I would love that.
That would be fantastic. Now, in your opinion with regression, now, those from India, I mean, I remember growing up as a kid, I was always told that the people in India did not believed in reincarnation. Therefore, they did not eat cows, for example, thinking that that was their, family member from another life. How did they get so tuned into that?
I'm not sure. There seems to be just an ancient wisdom. So many people in India, Hindu religion, it's also found in Buddhist religion, and lots of Asian religions just have this belief of reincarnation, and you can find them in these ancient scriptures. So some seems to me they've just always known this truth, and the Western world might be a little slower to catch up to it, but I think we are catching up to it.
Why do we not have the memory of the past lives unless we're hypnotized or regressed?
Well, I can only give you my thoughts on this because I think that's a great question and I wish I knew the answer. But one idea I have is that it would feel really overwhelming if we remembered everything. And somebody brought this up at a book signing I did the other week, and I think it's a great point. There are people who, this has nothing to do with past lives, but they remember everything in their current life. They can remember every date, every emotional instance. They remember how they felt 40 years ago when somebody kicked them. And they say it's actually not a blessing, it's a curse, because it's just, you can't even move on past these things, you always remember them. And I think the same thing would be true if we remembered all our past lives. I mean, imagine if you went to Starbucks and you were getting a coffee and the barista gave you the coffee and you say, oh, I remember this person took my camel in 300 BC and you're angry at them, and this is happening with every single person you ever meet. I think that would be way too overwhelming. And also, we're learning our lessons in this life, and to me, if you remembered everything from past lives, it's kind of like taking an open book test, whereas if you don't remember it, it's taking a regular test where you have to not just call upon your memory, but see if you really learn the material.
Is your dad up listening to you now?
I'm not sure. He's traveling right now from Italy to Europe, so it's a good time for him to listen, so hopefully he is.
Yeah, he is. If he's a Coast Insider, he can hear you right now, probably. Hello, Dr. Brian. How are you? He got his degree in medicine, and of course, he specialized as a psychiatrist, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
And then what was it that got him, Amy, into reincarnation and past lives?
Well, unlike me, he did not grow up with any of this. And in fact, as a scientist, he didn't believe in any of this at all. And like you said, he was a psychiatrist. So he was using traditional psychoanalytical techniques with his patient, which is using hypnosis to bring them back to the time that their symptoms first began. And usually that takes the patient back to childhood. But when he was working with a patient named Catherine, who had phobias and some problems in her relationships, he instructed her, using hypnosis, to go back in time to when her symptoms first began, and much to his surprise, she went back to past lives. And what really surprised him was that she had some pretty entrenched physical and emotional symptoms, and when she went back to the past lives and recalled the past lives and learned the lesson from him, her symptoms started disappearing. And for him, as a psychiatrist, a clinician, he was really interested, what is this technique that heals people much faster than talk therapy and with no side effects? And so that really began him on his journey.
Take us through the steps of what happens after the moment of death. This is all your opinion, of course, but kind of paint a picture for us. A person's in a hospital room, for example, or they die in their bed. What happens at that moment?
That's a very good question, George. I think their spirit leaves their body at that moment.
Do we see the dead body in the bed as we get out of the body?
It seems to be the case when I read books by Michael Newton, who's talking about life after life, and he describes that there seems to be a similarity of cases in which people can look down at their body, and it's interesting because that's the first time in their life they can see things like their own back. And the spirit starts to go into the next dimension, starts to pass on. And typically, I find the spirit is reunited with loved ones that have passed, and that can include animals and pets too. And then they start to experience a life review, which is a review of the life they've just left behind, in which they see like a movie or feel everything they did in their past life, their behaviors, mm-hmm. their words, their thoughts, their actions, and how it affected other people. And they feel it physically in their body. When they were kind to another person, it's like the kindness comes back to them magnified. And when they hurt another person, they feel the hurt. And this isn't punishment. It's just so they can learn, oh, this is what it felt like to the other person when I did this. Maybe I won't do it again. And then I think, like we were saying earlier, some time passes and then the soul starts to plan its next life. And then they reincarnate into a baby's body.
How soon do you think it leaves the physical structure of where you were living? I mean, so you die, you're hovering around your body, you're looking at it. I assume you're conscious in the soul state, and you're saying, oh, geez, I'm dead. And, I mean, when do you, like, leave the... And we're going to talk about hauntings in a second, too. I want to get your take on that. But when do you think they leave that environment? And when they do, then where do they go? What's there? That heaven, hell thing? What do they go to?
Yeah, heaven and hell doesn't resonate with me. I think they might experience those things if that's the belief system. They might experience it at first, but ultimately I don't really believe that either of those exist. It's just kind of another dimension and the same. It's the same world, but it's just a higher dimension. And so I don't think it takes, in my opinion, I really don't know, that long for a soul to leave the body. The soul can choose maybe to stay around if there's something it needs to. But I think from what I've heard, soul starts to leave pretty days, and by day three, it's no longer really attached to the body by then.
It's gone. So what is the environment? You know, I keep talking of our dimension, what we're in now, but what does that look like on the other side? I mean, is there anything in terms of visualization?
That's a great question, George. I don't really know. I've read reports where it looks to some people like a tunnel or just a giant, it seems to be the overwhelming consensus is some kind of light with a sound, often a sound of just pure love. And that's really what I've read and heard and found even with my own clients so many times, the overwhelming sense is a feeling of love. So it's not even about the visual aspect or the sound or anything, but it just seems to be a state of complete bliss and unconditional love.
Do you ever get that feeling of emotion on the other side? I mean, do you get sad because you've died? Or because you may miss the people you've left behind? Does that happen?
It doesn't really seem to happen, George. It seems to be more that feeling of just acceptance and understanding and freedom and love. And I think you don't really feel the human emotions like grief and sadness and regret on the other side in the same way that we do here. You have a greater perspective there. You can see it, all the ways that the universe was working for that life.
Well, with Amy Weiss, her latest book is called Crescendo, and her website is linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. It's amy-weiss.com. You got that little dash in between, but it's linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. We'll be back with much more next hour. We'll open up the phone lines with her. Questions and your own stories on past lives. Welcome back. Amy Weiss with us, author of her latest book, Crescendo. How'd you get the title, Amy?
Well, crescendo is a musical term, and music is a big metaphor in this book, but it also means growing. And I think that's what all our souls are here in this physical world to do. It's to grow and to evolve. And so just like the main character, Arya, her soul is growing throughout the book, and she's learning, so are we all doing that. That's what all our souls are doing.
Okay, so back to the moment of death where you hang around for several days maybe, and then you realize, you know, it's time to move on, and you go to this other place. Do we have the right to pick the family we want to join up with when we come back?
Do you mean the family that we'll be born into?
Yeah, that we will be born into, that we have reincarnated into. Do we pick that family?
Absolutely. I believe that we do. And that's what I found with clients and in my father's work with clients. It's not a coincidence, or it's not random.
So in this life, I picked this family that I had.
I think so.
I did a good job.
So did I.
Interesting tech. Now, is there anything there, any entity that the Akashic Records, where we look at what we did in our lives, is there somebody there saying, you know, you didn't do it the right way, and, you know, you're going to have to be punished a little bit? Does that happen?
No, I don't think so. In my opinion, no. I do think we have guides and teachers and mentors on the other side who might say something more along the lines of, you know, when you did it that way, you missed an opportunity to learn or to be kind to someone else. Maybe it would be better to do it a different way. I don't think we're ever punished. And I know some people talk about karma as a punishment, but to me, it's not a punishment at all. It's just an opportunity for us to learn. And so it's not like we're punished by being born into a bad body or something like that in our next life. It's more like, oh, let me learn this lesson from another angle. You know, I was really rich in the past life. Maybe now I didn't learn correctly about the value of money or whatever it is. Let me be poor in this life just to learn what it feels like. And ultimately, we're going to experience all of those things throughout our lifetimes.
Who could be so brilliant to design all this? And I'm taking out religion, but this is so well planned and orchestrated. And thought out. It's methodical. Who would do that?
Well, if you're asking me about God,
I think I am in my own way.
I am not religious either, but I do believe that there is a wisdom and a higher intelligence, and whether you want to call it God or the universe or any name, to me, the name is not important. But the way I've kind of thought of it in my mind, and I certainly don't have the answer and don't know what God is, but it's sort of like when you have a quilt, you have these individual squares of fabric that make up the quilt. And we're the individual squares. We're the same material as the quilt, but we're broken up into separate little pieces. And when you put the whole thing together and you have that all-encompassing quilt, that's God. It's the same thing as us, but it's the unity of us.
Do we ever run out of souls to reincarnate?
No, I don't think so. And in fact, it seems like there's maybe more souls than before, because Earth isn't, from what I found, Earth isn't the only place where souls come from, and it's not the only school in which souls are. So there can be souls in other dimensions, and even souls can split and have simultaneous experiences.
Are there only souls for human beings, or do animals and insects have them too?
This is just my personal opinion, but what I think is that, of course, animals have souls too. And if you've ever, I don't want to say owned an animal, but, you know, shared your life with an animal, you can even see that in their personalities and their eyes. And I've just heard so many stories with my own clients and people telling me the stories of animals reincarnating. And it can happen both the animals, our pets, being with us in
right.
our future lives, but also they can reincarnate more than once in our present life because their lifespans are so short.
We may get calls from people who have been active with animals who have passed on, and they may share those stories. I mean, I remember one, Amy, that somebody had a cat that died, and they saw on their bed the indentations of paw prints walking on the bed. Obviously, there was nothing physical there, but they were convinced that was their cat that had passed on.
I love stories like that. I've just heard one recently from my best friend, too. She felt the cat needing her. And I'm a huge animal lover, so if callers call in with the stories, I'd be delighted to hear them.
What is our soul's purpose, in your opinion? What's it all about?
Yeah, George, that's a great question. To me,
I should say, what's it all about, Alfie, but your name's Amy.
I think we're here to learn our lessons, but it's not meant to be, life isn't meant to be a task or a drudge. I think part of the reason for us incarnating into this earthly body is to enjoy Earth and the physical pleasures. This is the only place, really, where we can have senses and physical pleasures. And on the other side, I think it's blissful and it's all love, but we don't have bodies. So to me, one of the purposes is incarnating is just to enjoy life. And I think in our culture, we tend to think, oh, okay, we incarnate to be successful or to have a family or to have a great career. To me, it's much simpler than that. It could be our purpose is something as simple as, and this is something I wrote about in Crescendo, enjoying a summer night. Like, what if that is our whole life purpose, is just to take pleasure in a summer night? And every part of life that happens before that or after that doesn't matter. It's just enjoying a summer night.
What you have just said is so profound, and I truly believe that. That, you know, we are here to enjoy. And I wish governmental leaders worldwide would take heed with what you just said and make this planet a little better for everybody instead of the hate and the killings and the things that have gone on since the beginning of time.
I agree. And what you said to me is also very profound. I think a huge reason why we're here is to make the world a better place through love. And sometimes I would even ask myself the question, like, oh, the world feels so difficult. Why do we have to be here? What's the point of this? And my answer to myself was, even if we do a little kindness once a day, like just simply holding the door open for somebody, which even if you're feeling depressed, doesn't take that much effort to do, you've just made the world more full of love than before. You've increased the love in the world. And to me, that's a huge success of a life. And if you can do that every day or every so often, what a beautiful world that would be.
Have you noticed how people are in shock when you open a door for them or hold it open? They thank you, but they just don't expect it.
It's true, and that's sad to me. Especially I find that here in Miami and some big cities. In St. Louis, I think people were more generous with their kind of behavior.
But I saw a family today. I'm not bragging, but it's a story, so I'm going to tell you. I was leaving the post office here in L.A., and I saw a family of a man, a woman, and two kids standing at the corner where the cars are leaving the post office, holding up a sign that said, "Please help us." Mm-hmm. Now, I'm thinking to myself, this has got to be one of the greatest scams I've ever seen, because, you know, he's got his wife there, and clearly they were from a different country, clearly. Mm-hmm. And the two little kids are standing there, and he's holding this sign. And but it hit me, and I do this often. I do help these people. I said, I don't care if it's a scam or not, because if it's not, and I expect it to be a scam, I've just hurt these people by not helping them, and I have the ability to help them. So I don't care if it's a scam. And if it's a scam, it's a darn good one. The guy deserves an acting award. And so as I'm pulling out, you know, I reached in and I grabbed some money in my pocket, and I waved him over, and he was in shock. I gave him something, and he went back. And I don't know what happened. I don't know what he told his wife and his little kids, but maybe it made his day. But I think we need to be doing more things for people who don't have, and we would change this planet emotionally and energetically if we would do that.
That's so powerful, George. I love that story. And it reminds me of a story my brother told me. He was driving with my nephew, his son, and I don't remember how old my nephew was at the time, but he was a child. And my father, or my brother, was driving, and he saw somebody begging for money in a strip mall or something. And it was hard for him to get to Travis. My nephew wanted to give that person money, but it was too hard for my brother to get over there. He was in an opposite lane or something, and it was a busy highway. And so he left. And then my nephew said to him, "Oh, Dad, we could have been heroes." And so my brother turned around and
went back
to the strip mall to give it. And every time I don't give to somebody, I say to myself, like, oh, I missed my opportunity. I could have been a hero.
Well, you know what is strange? And I don't do this to receive, but it always happens. It seems that the more you give or help, the more comes back to you. I don't know if it's karma or what the heck it is, but who's ever in charge of, you know, this for that, it pays off. It's, I've never seen anything so remarkable than things like that.
That's beautiful. And when you think about a lot of spiritual thoughts will say, actually, we aren't different people. Every single person you meet is you. So when you're giving to somebody else, like you're talking about, actually you're giving to yourself, and that's why you receive it back.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, for example, you know, you give away $20 or whatever it is. The next day in the mail, you have a check for $300 because you were part of a class action consumer suit that you had no idea you were in, a card you signed 5 years ago, but they settled with the company. And, you know, it's one of these things like, you know, did you receive harassing phone calls from this company? I don't know. But you're in the class, and those things happen. I mean, I don't know why or who does that, but it seems to be the more you give, the more you get back.
And yeah, and you don't always have to give money either for people listening who can't give money. It's not really about, it's the energy. So you can give a smile or your heart or whatever it is.
And the reversal, it takes effect too, and that is if you're bad or evil to somebody, it comes back and bites you too.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, I've watched it. I've done some experiments. So let's talk a little bit about the future lives for individuals, people who will pass on. How long is this going to continue? I mean, does it ever stop? God forbid, if the planet blew up by us, does the other world still exist? If you don't have physical bodies here, do they go somewhere else to a different planet?
That's exactly what I think happens, George. We would go somewhere else to a different planet. Maybe we wouldn't have the same kind of carbon-based body, but we would have some sort of life form that would allow us to participate in this cosmic play the same we're doing now. But it would be much better to take care of the planet we do have.
Yeah, it's easier. We're here.
Right, exactly.
I'm just not sure we're going to be able to do that unless something catastrophic happens.
Mm-hmm.
There just seems to be too much greed and evil out there, way too much.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You have talked about soulmates. Give me your definition of a soulmate.
Well, to me, I think we tend to think of soulmates as being romantic, but to me, we have many soulmates, and they may not be romantic. It could be your best friend or your child or parent or beloved grandparent or even a teacher who sets you on a different course in your life, that could be a soulmate. And so I find that they're not necessarily somebody you have in your life forever. It could be once your lesson is learned with that particular person, you move on. And that's not really a tragedy. It's just learning. And so I think we have multiple soulmates and could be romantic, some of them not. So they're all here. The way I tend to think of a soulmate is somebody who's helping our soul evolve and grow. And so maybe at times that might feel unpleasant. It's not like necessarily a soulmate relationship is all butterflies and fireworks. It could be a little painful. But it's somebody we've known throughout our lifetimes, we'll know in future lifetimes, and they're here to help us grow.
Can you be a soulmate with somebody and the relationship breaks up? Because a lot
Absolutely.
Of people are in shock about that. You know, I was married to my soulmate and then it fell apart. We got divorced. How can that be? Are they really soulmates?
I think they are. They're still soulmates. It could just be, okay, you've learned all the lessons you have to learn with that person. Your soul is not going to grow anymore with that person. It's time to move on. It's kind of like if you were in kindergarten and the class ended and your brain was too advanced and you needed to move on to first grade, but you didn't want to. It's like breaking up the relationship with kindergarten. So I think, yeah, even if you get divorced or the relationship ends, it doesn't mean that person wasn't a soulmate. It just means your contract with that person perhaps is finished.
Scientists are now talking about parallel universes, and because we can't even explain our own universe, it's very possible that there are many parallel universes, don't you think?
I do think, George, and statistically, I find that's probable. And I'm really interested in physicists talking about parallel universes, and I do discuss this in my book just because I find it so fascinating. And the idea explored in this book was The idea that every time we make a decision in our lives, the universe splits in two. And so in one universe, there's the consequences of, you say you're turning left, and one universe turning right. And in every subsequent universe, when you make a decision, those split in two. And so there was an author I was reading named Taylor Jenkins Reid, who explained this in a succinct way that I really liked. And she said, we tend to think of when you flip a coin, heads, you get heads or tails. But what if you got heads and tails?
Huh.
So in one universe, it's heads, and one, it's tails, and they just split on indefinitely.
And in another universe, it lands on its side.
Right, exactly.
Like a Twilight Zone movie.
Exactly.
You play the harp.
I do. I play a harp. It's a little, it's not the big floor harp, but it's a therapy harp. So it's kind of like a lap harp or a Celtic harp.
I mean, is there any way when we come back from this quick break and take calls, you can, do you have the harp with you right now?
No, I don't. I'm sorry.
Ah, I'm going to have you play a little tune for us.
Oh. Well, I could give you an example of an artist, a harp therapy artist that I love. Her name is Amy Kamey, which is funny.
Amy Kamey?
Yeah, and she does harp therapy, so she plays in a way that's meant to relax you and help your immune levels, help your brain waves, so it's a really therapeutic way of playing, and her CD called The Magic Mirror is just fantastic. So instead of me playing, it's much better to listen to that other Amy.
I know that name for some reason, but we're going to come back in a moment. We're going to take phone calls, your questions, your stories, animals and souls, people, next.